Hello, and welcome to the Yearly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting our favorite comics of the year. We'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but may discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this Yearly Comic Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to talk about the comics from 2024. James, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing good. Now, the format of the Yearly Comic Spotlight used to be based on kind of the weekly comic spotlight. We do a lot of DC, then Marvel, and others and stuff. But it's based on the survey I put on the forum, and admittedly did not promote that as much as we sometimes do, but it's been a busy time lately. And we're going to read off the listener picks from each category. I want to go through a couple of opening comments and stuff before we get to the questions and stuff. But these yearly comic spotlights have ranged from under an hour to around 6 hours. I think it was, what, last year that was a, you know, we recorded for like 7 and I was able to boil it down.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah. I streamlined the questions this year.
Yes.
I had meant to do that last year, but had forgotten. So bad on me, but it was good conversation, good stuff.
It was. It was fun. It was just a lot to record and edit for you.
Yeah. But I enjoy these episodes because it gives us and the listeners a chance to kind of take a step back, look at the year in totality, get away from the what's now, what's hot, and stuff like that, and see if, you know, I don't know, maybe we can remember what happened back in January of 2024.
Fingers crossed we can.
Yeah, for me, it's always a challenge. So let's get comfortable. Let's get retrospective about 2024. Now, I usually do some stats on how many comics I got and stuff like that, and my system is still very much in Excel. I'm still updating the Collector Z comic collector. So you know what they say about a guy with two clocks is never quite sure what time it is.
Yeah.
So little of that here. I got around 731 new comics in 2024, which is only about 16 more than what I'd gotten in 2023.
Wow.
So not much of a change, and it was up.
I'm surprised it was up because I know you had curtailed your reading in 2023. And I had assumed that you curtailed it a little bit more in 2024.
Same here. I thought I was doing better on that than I was. I'm not quite sure what happened. I mean, I blame certain things like recently Action Comics having gone weekly. That was 8 of them right there.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that rapid fire succession.
You know, and then I got into one or two events a little deeper than probably I should have. But again, it was more or less what it was the previous year. But given I am trying to kind of cut back a little, I need to do better on that. I think I'm not pulling the plug on some titles I'm not enjoying as quickly as I should be. I think I'm being maybe a little more charitable on some new titles than maybe I should be. And we'll see if I do any better in 2025.
Cool.
Now, we also read a bunch of other comics for, you know, back issue spotlights, Astro City Spotlight, Warlord Spotlights, and stuff like that.
We did read quite a bit. And on top of that, I know you and I both will read novels too from time to time.
Yeah. Well, I think we covered, based on the episodes that came out in 2024, 36 issues of Astro City.
Wow.
36 of Warlord. I think we covered about 24 issues in that Free Comic Day spotlight we did.
Wow.
And then I did another 24 issues of Legion.
Oh, yeah. Your solo Legion, which is kind of like ironic that the biggest team there is, you do it alone.
Well, part of it is it's bouncing through enough different titles. I think it might be hard to get a good co-host for that. Although, actually, Jason Z would probably be a great pick for that.
I agree.
It just comes down to the idea originally was, oh, this will be easy to schedule and stuff, but I'm really bad about procrastinating when I don't have somebody kind of keeping me accountable and stuff, which is why those episodes come out when they come out.
Yeah.
So.
And that makes sense.
There's some issues I want to cover more, others I want to just, yeah, it happened, you know, so there's that.
Cool.
But that was 165 comics on top of the 731 or whatever I got.
So we still read a heck of a lot of comics.
Yeah. What got me was the division of the comics was surprisingly close to an even three-way split between Marvel, DC, and the others.
That's surprising because you've typically been a big two guy with the superhero being your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So you've gone much heavier into the indies. Or other, I should say.
Other, yeah. That was still the smallest section for me, but it was not that far behind DC, which was not that far behind Marvel.
Yeah. And I will tell you, just this is just off the top of the dome, for me, DC got better near year's end. At the beginning of the year, it was really struggling. And it flip-flopped for Marvel. They seemed like they were doing better at the beginning of the year and then kind of tailed off at the end of the year for me. That's just me.
I don't know. For me, I think DC was just struggling all year.
Yeah. And when I say doing a little bit better, they got a little bit of energy behind them with the Absolute stuff and things like that.
Yeah, of course, I'm dropping two of the three current titles for that, so...
That's true. Nix that comment.
But generally speaking, I do think a lot of people are enjoying the Absolute stuff, and it is giving them some momentum that they needed.
Yeah.
According to my Excel inventory, I'm at around 71,357 comics. That's a low count because not everything's in there. The plan was to add more back issues to the Comic Collector database during 2023 and 2024. Didn't happen. At this point, I'm not expecting it to happen in 2025. At some point, I'll get back to that. I just have some other stuff on the plate.
It's a lot of work.
That having been said, I think I've got about 42, almost 43% of my collection in there already.
Yeah, that less than half, though. That's crazy. That's a lot of work left to go.
Yeah, but a lot of it is when I get the new comics in, I'm scanning them in with the barcode scanner.
Ah.
And I've been doing that since 2011, I think.
Yeah. And I'm still liking the CLZ app. I just wish they had their annual sales versus paying full freight for the updates.
I stopped renewing the subscription every year when they stopped doing the sale once a year.
Me too.
I was looking at their website recently, and it looked like they've made some improvements to the Add New Comics page, which is like my main use case. But it's like, wow, they never bothered to email me about that. And I think there's things they could do to bump up their sales. Promotion a little bit better and do a doorbuster sale once a year or something like that and let me know about it.
Yeah, I mean, periodically, I think that Black Friday thing was great because let's say it was 50% off or 40% off. It's better to do that than just have a half your user base, if not more, just sitting on the sidelines paying nothing.
Yep, exactly. And then we did quite a few back issue spotlights covering Batman, Son of the Demon, Bride of the Demon, Birth of the Demon, Batman and Son, Flash Gordon, Starlight, Future Quest, Daredevil Born Again, and then the Claws one-shots we just did for the holidays. So we covered quite a bit of ground in those episodes. And then once we've covered the listener questions, I've got the stats for the episodes, how many we did, and the total counts and stuff like that. Let's go through the survey and let's see what the listeners had to say.
Sounds good.
All right, so we had, I think, 8 people chime in. I will start with the first question, which I added a couple of years back because there were a few usernames I couldn't pronounce, and I'm like, okay, what should we call you when reading your picks? Now, I'll give my answer first because it's pretty simple. John. I answer to John. How about you?
I answer to James. You can also call me King James if you'd like to. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm a junior. My dad goes by Jim. And so as young, I went by Jimmy. That's the old school, but I am James.
That's funny because my dad's name was John too, but his father's name was John. So my dad went by Jack because he was the junior.
Ah.
And for the longest time, whenever the two of us would travel, be at the same hotel, whatever, back in the day when they gave you paper bills and stuff.
Yeah.
They'd slide it under my door because he was the junior.
That's funny.
And it's like, I mean, I guess technically I would be a senior, certainly more now than then. But there's no junior to be had, so it's, yeah.
You pay the bill.
Yeah. I'm like, Dad, what do I do with this? I'll take care of it. He was a good dad that way. All right, so from listener picks, we've got Nick's Picks, who says we can call him Nick's Picks. That's pretty simple. We got Nicholas, going by Nicholas. X-Men Patrick, or Patrick. GL Fan, we can call him Zach. He's fine with that. We've got Chris, I think that's Chris Myers. We got Jason Zeller, Dr. Mo, and we've got Marvin. Now, not everybody necessarily answered every question, so we're just going to, you know, read off what we've got. All right. Shall we head to the first actual topic?
Yeah. Our first topic was, what is your favorite comic collected edition? It could be a series, a story arc, or a single issue. For me, there was a ton of comics I really liked. Like, I liked Avengers Twilight with Zdarsky over at Marvel. I liked Return of the Planet of the Apes. I thought that was a terrific series. Justice League versus Godzilla from DC. But I think when I go down to what made me the most happy and what was the book I looked forward to the most, it was Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok with Rook Exodus, which is part of the new imprint Ghost Machine over Image. It's a sci-fi post-apocalyptic twice over, And what I mean by twice over, it's people have left the Earth because the Earth was kind of almost laid to waste. You know, the crops are dying. It's overheated, overpopulated. It went to Mars. Then there's another apocalypse that happens on Mars. And so now the people want to go back to Earth. So twice over. And there's a ton of world building. There's a mythos. People wearing on this planet and Mars, they're called wardens. And they wear almost like a helmet of the animals that they are the warden for. So these people, they're like, one of them is named Rook, which is basically like crows. And he puts on his little rook-looking helmet and he can talk and communicate with the crows. Or one that talks to the bears, Ursal. One that can talk to wolves. And something happens with basically like the engine that keeps the planet alive. It gets destroyed. Mars is kind of imploding. Animals are becoming very large size. It is fantastic. If you like world building and you like sci-fi and you like Geoff Johns, you got to read this book.
I'm glad they're having a lot of success over at Ghost Machine because I think they've just got some great creators.
Yeah. And that was a big one to pick for me because, you know, Titan has the Conan series I've been loving.
Yeah.
But I had to go with them, with Geoff Johns.
Cool. Makes sense. For me, there wasn't really kind of any crystal clear winner because I think a lot of it for me was there were a lot of good comics, very few that I would consider great comics, and I don't know that there were any that I considered just absolutely outstanding comics.
So what's the closest one for you?
Kind of with one from each category, Marvel, DC, and other.
Okay.
For DC, I went with Justice Society of America number 10.
Ah.
I thought it was a really fun issue. It was nice to see the Legion again. I'm still a little confused as to what's the current Legion going on, because they're kind of leaning towards the retro boot Legion, but the four boot with the Bendis was what we had last, so it was a good issue. I wish they would kind of actually have used the Legion more, but again, Geoff Johns. He knows how to write. Now, granted, that series started in 2022, so it took a while, but you know, I'll take what I can get. Over at Marvel, Ultimates number 1 I thought was a really good first issue. Generally speaking, I think they kicked off this new Ultimate line fairly well. I like the idea of kind of that ticking clock. I was expecting it to kind of keep things moving at a little better pace than maybe it has, but I'm enjoying the Ultimates. I'm enjoying Ultimate Spider-Man. I'll admit I get frustrated by those because not a lot happens, but when those things are on their A game, they do a good job.
I would agree.
It's a little sad, though, that my favorite thing about Marvel isn't in the Marvel Universe per se, but, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah.
And then for the other stuff, Thundercats. The first issue really kicked it off well. It was clear it was kind of a, I don't want to say a reimagining, but a retelling of kind of the classic Thundercat stuff. And they were going to go their own way, but they were going to hold true to the spirit and intent of the original cartoon. And I think they've done a very good job of both charting their own course, but not verging so far afield from the classic stuff that it's off-putting. They did a Chitara miniseries. They've done a one-shot or two. They've got another series coming up, Thundercats Lost, with some new characters. They're doing some good stuff.
Very cool.
But again, I don't think there was anything where I'm like, man, this is one of the best comics I've read in years, sort of a deal.
I know where you're coming from. For me, if it weren't for a couple Ghost Machine books, I don't think I'd have anything that I'm like, this is awesome. It was a little bit of a rough year.
Well, and even some of the stuff that was good at the beginning of the year feels a little forgettable now.
Yeah, it tailed off. Yeah.
Not even it tailed off. Like Avengers Twilight, you know, when you mentioned that, I checked my list. It's like, oh yeah, I guess that did come out this year.
Yeah.
It feels like a really long time ago.
It felt like it came out like 2 years ago. I was going through my list and I was just like, oh yeah, I really like that. It kind of jogged my memory, but yeah, it wasn't at top of mind when I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What did the listeners have to pick so I can say, oh, yeah, I should have called that one out?
All right. Well, Nick's picks, he actually had a very unique pick, and neither one of us have read this. His favorite collect edition for sure had to be Frank Johnson, Secret Pioneer of American Comics, Volume 1 from Fantagraphics. His story is too much to go into here, but basically this guy wrote and drew his own comics in notebooks that date back at least to his late teenage years in the 1920s. The stories were ongoing and covered over 2,300 pages that survived and were found by family members after his death. That's crazy. The art basically is fully formed from the start. His jokes are witty, and the presentation in the book is excellent. Fantagraphics presents it as an alternative secret history of the comics medium.
So let me see if I understand this. There's actually a guy who was doing his own comics and notebooks starting as a teenager or whatever in the 1920s.
Yeah.
Like 10, 20 years before comics as we knew them really even existed.
Yeah. This is insane, isn't it? This is the first I've ever heard of this, reading Nick's Pick's choice here.
Yeah, I don't recall it at all. And granted, there's a lot of stuff going on, particularly from publishers like Fantagraphics that just aren't on my radar. I'm curious how much of that is marketing pitch, how much of that is fact, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But interesting, yeah.
That's really kind of crazy. And it's basically like, it sounds like they're like funny books, jokes, and witty cartooning. So I wonder how much it goes between cartooning and comics, but it sounds fascinating, and that sounds really cool. They pitch it as the alternative secret history of the comics medium.
Hmm.
So super cool pick, Nick. I had never heard of that.
And thanks for the context. If you had just said, hey, Frank Johnson, secret pioneer of American comics, all you want, I'd been, don't know what that is. This is a good description, so thank you.
Very cool. All right, over to Nicholas. And Nicholas says, the Ultimates have been best. Fall of X, I liked as well. Hard to say individual issues, but the main miniseries that closed the Krakoan age was nicely done. You know what? I agree with him there.
Mm-hmm.
The new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men are back to basics and works well for me. Another high point for me is Always Monstrous by Liu and Takeda. I read a bunch of the latest, and that is a very nice fantasy story. One thing that's kind of interesting about he mentions Monstrous, I read that in single issues for like the first 30 issues. And then I somehow got lost at one of the breaks with the storyline. I kind of lose the thread and I can't remember, and getting back into it was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm buying it in hardcovers as they come out. I think I have one or two hardcovers. It was decent. It felt like a manga story, but with Western story tropes versus Japanese story tropes. I it's the best way I could say it. And fantasy. And it was great. Terrific art.
Hmm. I think mentioning Fall of X is also interesting because I think with the Krakoa era of X-Men, the way that was originally set up by Jonathan Hickman and stuff with House of X, Powers of X, complete game changer, flipped the whole X-Universe side of things on its head, really gave them years of great story potential and stuff. And then you look at how it ended, and not so much how it ended, but what came after that, completely lacked that kind of level, I think, of general excitement, of new possibilities, of kind of taking the characters in a place that made sense, that followed on from what had gone before, but had never been seen before. We're really back in kind of the, it's just back in the 90s.
Exactly. I'm a little bit sad, and I know the Krakoan era really split the readership, because some people really liked it. Some people are like, it's not the same. I was on the side of I really liked it. I felt like it was something new and fresh, moved the whole things forward, and I felt like there was more life to be told there in the story, and they switched because of the squeaky wheel gets the grease, in my opinion. I don't know. It could have been sales. I really don't know, but I will say I miss it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be remembered fondly for quite some time, and I think at some point we're going to get a second Krakoan Age just because it did so well in terms of galvanizing the readership initially, keeping them engaged for a surprisingly long time. And granted, I mean, sales dropped off over time. They always do.
Yeah.
But I think what we're seeing, what I'm feeling at least, is a stronger drop-off on the current X titles afterwards.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Okay, X-Men Patrick, or Patrick. Patrick, by the way, sometimes comes into the book club, so we know each other personally. We've seen each other in videos and talk.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick's a great guy. He said, reading Invincible again, I have the three soft cover omnis, and this will be my third pass, I believe. And that's awesome. And then he also said, Jason Aaron, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and anything Energon, which the whole Energon universe is the G.I. Joe and Transformers over at Image.
Yeah. Well, and Void Rivals.
Void Rivals. Yeah, yeah. So I know Patrick is a huge TMNT fan. I'm enjoying Jason Aaron's TMNT, my first time reading it. And I am not getting any of the Energon stuff, but I'm glad it's working for him. But Invincible is one that I would like to read through again. It's just great stuff. I got the omnis and I've read it. And I know they even have some new singles coming out. It was solicited in previews recently.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Invincible. It was a great read. I have not watched the cartoon yet. It's on the list to do at some point. And I'm curious how closely it follows the series.
Yeah, me too. Good stuff. Good picks. All right, over to Zach, Green Lantern fan. By the way, I'm a Green Lantern fan too. Green Lantern by Jeremy Adams. Surprise, surprise. And I would say I am really enjoying Green Lantern by Jeremy Adams. It's good stuff. The one thing that I always kind of question with the Green Lantern run currently by Jeremy Adams, for some reason, they seem like they have to keep coming out with this one-shot special for every story arc. Have you noticed that?
Well, we got the Civil Corps one. We've gotten the Fractured Lanterns or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like that's their new thing. Oh, here's the new story arc, new one-shot. It's very weird. I just don't know why they went that direction.
Well, and I think it's going to be good that they get a Green Lantern Corps title going, because it feels like there's a lot of story they're trying to tell in just one title.
I agree. More Green Lantern is better for me.
No argument there for me.
I'm loving it. All right, over to Chris. Geiger and Red Croat from Ghost Machine. I love those two. Surfside Girls, Clue in the Reef, written by Kim Dwinnell and published as a series of graphic novels by IDW. One Bad Day issues from DC, and I did only read one of those, I think. Lady Mechanica, Devil in the Lake by Joe Benitez, and published by Image Comics. I have read some Lady Mechanica in the past, but it's been a while. And I will say, honestly, Geiger and Redcoat are just fantastic series. Ghost Machine is awesome.
Well, and Lady Mechanica has got a huge following and stuff, as does Ghost Machine and stuff. So yeah, definitely some good picks.
Yeah, I think I told you this one time, but I went to MegaCon. I think it was my first MegaCon that I went there in Orlando. And Joe Benitez was there selling the little trade paperbacks. So I was like, I'll pick up four of them. I never read this stuff. But it was so nice. I didn't ask him to, but he came over and signed them all. I was like, thanks, man.
Oh, he's a super nice guy. I've seen him a number of times at San Diego and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just thought it was cool because I didn't even ask him to sign them, but he came over and made a point to sign them. It's kind of cool. Jason Zeller, Wesley Dodds, The Sandman, 6-issue miniseries. I did not read that. This was a fun retro series that happened in the Golden Age, right? Oh, no, I did read it. Right before Wesley Dodds met and joined the Justice Society of America. It made me want to have more comics set during this time, specifically with the JSA characters. I take it back. I did read it, and I thought, this isn't the Sandman, but it was so different.
I think there's definitely a missed opportunity here. Kind of like how Mark Waid is kind of carving out almost the Silver Age era of DC for somebody. And, you know, in the 80s, it would have been Roy Thomas who actually did this. Carve out the Golden Age era. Do some stuff with the JSA characters. Maybe do some period piece stuff with either Plastic Man or some of the other quality characters. Because I think they could tell some cool stories kind of set back in the day. Not necessarily World War II, but in the past. And definitely, I think there's a lot of fans of that era of characters they're just not serving these days.
I would agree. I thought it was a fun miniseries. It was kind of cool. I liked it. The whole wearing the gas mask thing and all that, it kind of worked.
Well, and they did a Jay Garrick one, and I'm trying to remember which was the other one they did.
I can't remember, but there were like three. I remember I got the Jay Garrick, and I remember the Sandman.
Oh, it was the Alan Scott Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had the Red Lantern and stuff. Yeah.
And I liked the Red Lantern more than him at that point. Just because I was like, I don't know. I thought I liked the character. I'm like, oh, this is cool. There's that. Okay. Dr. Moe, DC series Zatanna, Bring Down the House by Mariko Tamaki. I did not read that. And Javier Rodriguez, this artist. Marvel series, Rise of the Powers of X by Kieran Gillen, writer. RB Silva is the penciler for issues 1-4. And Luciano Vecchio, I think it is, penciler for issue 5. And then he had Dark Horse series, Dawn Runner by Ram V. He's the writer, of course. And Evan Cagle was the artist. And Image comic series, Public Domain by Chip Zdarsky, and writer and artist. And I know you have something to say about Public Domain, probably.
Yeah, I've been enjoying that. It's a fun kind of behind the scenes of a classic comic that the creator gets the rights back to and can do his version of the character while the current publisher can still do stuff. It'd be like if somebody got the rights to be doing Captain America alongside Marvel doing Captain America or whatever, but their own take. What blew me away was that they did a Domain series, which is what you kind of see them putting together in Public Domain. And they kind of, okay, here's the comic that came out. It's just fascinating stuff. If you want the behind the scenes type stuff, Chip Zdarsky's doing some great work there.
Yeah, it was fun. And I made the mistake of reading only one of those and not getting the crossover.
Well, the thing, they're not a crossover.
Exactly, not a crossover, but the book kind of referencing the other, I should say.
Yeah, you read Domain, but not Public Domain, I think it was.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then Marvin, is that The Walking Dead, TWDD?
Walking Dead Energy? Deluxe, I think.
Oh, Walking Dead Deluxe. I'm like, I know that's The Walking Dead. What's the other D? Okay, The Walking Dead Deluxe, meaning the color versions, and Energon Universe titles. So, yeah, he's enjoying. There's a lot of people. There was a podcast I was listening to today where they were talking. It was just an interview of Kirkman. It was all on the Energon Universe. And I'm just not as big of a fan as he is of like G.I. Joe and Transformers, but it's fantastic. And the sales have been doing really well since they took over the property. So that's cool. And you're a big fan of The Walking Dead Deluxe because The Walking Dead was great. Is the color still working for you?
Yeah. They've got out, how many did they get out this year? I mean, they got a bunch out. I want to say they got maybe 24 issues.
Yeah, they do two a month. They solicit two a month. So yeah, it's got to be 24.
They're coming out at a pretty good clip. They're over halfway through the series. The color adds to the book. It doesn't like revolutionize it or anything. But given we're, 10, 15 years past when these had originally come out, it's like reading the book all over again. There's a couple of things. Oh yeah, I remember this. Here's the highlights. And there are a couple others. It's like, I have zero recollection of this character. You must not last long. It's a book well worth a reread.
Yeah, it's crazy how sometimes you really enjoy a book and you go back and read it again. And if it's just as enjoyable or you pick up new things, you realize that's a really good book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Versus, what was this again? I don't remember it.
Or it's not as good as I remember it.
Yeah, it's not as good. Yeah, this didn't hold over
so easy
well.
For that to happen, too.
Yeah. All right. On to question three.
Yeah. Next question is favorite creator, writer, artist, etc. For me, this was pretty easy to do. I went through my spreadsheet and it's like, okay, based on the ratings, who's gotten the most, points as a writer and an artist? And then I always look at that because sometimes I can't do it on the average. Do they get enough out? Whatever. There were two people that I think were fairly prolific this past year, and I just universally enjoyed what they were doing. And they happened to do quite a bit together. Not everything together, but quite a bit. And I was happy with that. So for writer, I went with Mark Waid, who's just doing some of the best stuff at DC these days. And then artist Dan Mora, who's worked with him on a number of titles. Both of them were on Absolute Power. Both of them were on Batman Superman World's Finest, Justice League Unlimited. Mark Waid was also doing some stuff over on Action Comics and Batman Robin Year One. Dan Mora also did an issue of Superman and a bunch of covers here and there. Both are very talented.
Very, very cool. Well, for me, I was debating between three writers just from sheer enjoyment, and it was Jeremy Adams, Jeff Johns, and Jason Aaron. Those were the three.
Mm.
And you know a lot of the books they wrote. And I was starting to lead towards Jeff Johns because he did that JSA wrap-up because it was Slate. And then he did all the prolific stuff over Image. But believe it or not, because I gave him the top book, I went with Jason Aaron just because he has done so many good things with different publishers. Absolute Superman, Namor, Savage Sword of Conan over at Titan with the King Conan story. And he's also at IDW doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So Jason Aaron is very prolific. He's all over the place. And I think he's doing a really solid job with all of those different projects for multiple publishers. So I give my tip of the hat to Jason Aaron this year.
I can totally understand that. And prolific in a different way than like Mark Waid?
Yeah, very different. Not all with one publisher. Yeah.
Well, Mark Waid not only is predominantly all with one publisher, but also even if there were different titles or different publishers and stuff, they're all kind of in the same wheelhouse.
Exactly.
But
whereas like Turtles and
Turtles, Conan, it's
Namor.
Yeah, that's a lot of different genres and stuff.
Yeah, I was looking at it as like, you got to give the guy a tip of the hat because it's so many different things, very different things with different publishers. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, totally understand that. All right, shall we go for the listener picks?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
All right, Nick starts us off with a name that's impossible to pronounce. I'm going to go with Bilkis Evli.
That's what I would say.
Okay. I want pronunciation guides. No, this is the artist on Helen of Windhorn at Dark Horse. Totally unfamiliar with the title. Nicholas went with Hickman, Ultimate Spider-Man, Hope That Can Continue Showing an Actual Functional Adult Version of Spider-Man. Zeb Wells' issue of Amazing Spider-Man 55 did a good take on how Peter's doing all the unresponsible choices under the guise of responsibility. I still want to see the Ultimate Spider-Man and the Classic Spider-Man meet. Just as a compare and contrast exercise, if you get the right writer.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, X-Men Patrick went with Charles Soule for the writer on 8 Billion Genies, Star Wars, and Lucky Devils. For artist, went with Trish Forstner for Stray Dogs and Feral. Oh, yeah, some beautiful art there.
I love Feral. I'm loving that book.
And then cover artist, Scotty Young. Nice to see the fun in the covers with the characters. Yeah, Scotty Young's been doing that for, it seems like, forever now.
Exactly. He has a very distinct style with those, like, almost like kiddie drawings. I hate to call them that, but, like, almost like Garbage Pail Kids.
Well, definitely a cartoony style. I'll be honest, I don't care for the style, but it's very distinctive. And the people who love it absolutely love it.
Yeah. And I say Garbage Pail because they're, like, evil ones. Like, little cartoony characters, but with lots of attitude and sometimes vitriol behind them.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of go-to cover artists of the current era. Scotty Young is absolutely one of them.
Yeah, and I would say Peach Momoko is another one that's real popular.
That's another one, yeah.
Peach Momoko, I do not like your Ultimate X-Men writing, but her cover art, very popular. She has a fan base. He or she, I don't know if Peach is a guy or a girl. I don't know.
All right, GeoFan. Zach went with Jeremy Adams on Green Lantern, I believe. Unsurprising, not a bad pick either. You're doing some fun stuff there.
I love Jeremy Adams. I love his Green Lantern.
Yeah. Chris went for Jeff Johns, writer of JSA, Green Lantern, Geiger, and other Ghost Machine titles.
I agree. I agree with you.
At some point, it'd be worth going back through the yearly comic spotlight stuff and seeing how many times Jeff Johns has been picked as somebody's favorite writer.
He's a great writer. He's amazing at what he does.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if he's ever missed a year of getting mentioned on the podcast for the year-end one.
Yeah.
And if so, was he just unusually busy and not doing comics that year? Because, again, he's got a great track record.
Yes, he does.
All right. Jason Zeller. He went with Jed McKay, having done a wonderful job on Moon Knight and a continuing saga from the Moon Knight series to the Vengeance of Moon Knight and finally on to the current Moon Knight Fists of Khonshu. Feels like he has his own little pocket universe with villains and supporting heroes. Could have done without the two new series relaunches and would rather instead they'd continue the original 30-issue run of Moon Knight. Also wishes there was more popularity with the street-level characters other than Batman. I was very glad Batman's popularity continues with the wide variety of stories in many different settings. Though Batman can hold his own, even in settings where every other character is a superhero, Jason prefers the street-level stories where he's the detective figuring things out or in a setting where he's dealing with the supernatural. He thinks Batman's popularity persists due to his outfit where he's dressed like a creature of the night like Dracula, the street-level vigilante side of him like the Shadow, the detective side where he's like Sherlock Holmes outsmarting the villain, the vehicle and gadgets where he's like James Bond, and finally his rogues gallery, which you could hold up to any in comics is one of the most interesting.
Yeah, I would say the two best rogues galleries are Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Just in my opinion, those two.
I was going to say the third one that comes to mind isn't so much a comic character, but a comic strip character of Dick Tracy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tons.
It's surprising how many superheroes, they've got a good rogues gallery or whatever, but none are as iconic as the ones you mentioned and stuff. I mean, again, Batman's and Spider-Man's, it's just they're diverse. And part of it is those characters have had a long history, multiple titles, etc. So they've had more villains to fight. But I mean, The Flash has a great rogues gallery, but it's a different kind than
exactly
Batman and Spider-Man's.
I agree. I don't know what it is, but I enjoy both the rogues galleries of those two characters the most. You know, whether it's the Joker or on the other side, the Vulture, or pick your poison. There's tons of them.
I would love for them to do, it never happened, but a crossover, 12 issues, Batman, Spider-Man, where they have to deal with their rogues galleries kind of teaming up.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
To go after the two.
Yeah.
And essentially having Peter almost fill kind of the Robin Nightwing role for Batman, but not quite.
Yeah, telling kind of the jokes and not taking it serious enough, like a young Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
It would work.
Be a lot of fun. Actually, if they ever do an amalgam thing, that's the approach they should take.
Yeah, the team up. You're the new, I wouldn't call him Robin, but like in the Robin role and teaming up to fight each other's rogues galleries.
Batman and the Spider or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, all right, okay, Dr. Moe, favorite writer, Mark Waid, Batman, Superman, World's Finest, Batman and Robin Year One, Absolute Power, Justice League Unlimited, all from DC. Favorite artist, Brian Hitch, Redcoat from Image Comics. Favorite colorist, Brad Anderson on Geiger and Redcoat.
Ah, that's what Brad's doing. I never pay attention to the colorist, and I love the colors in there, and I wonder what he was doing, because he wasn't doing Astro City right now.
That's Brent Anderson, the artist.
Oh, Brent Anderson!
Totally different.
Hey, another Anderson. My bad. All right, I'm sorry to the Anderson family on both sides.
Families.
Families, yes.
It's nice to have a colorist called out, because that's something that if they're doing their job well, you don't notice it sometimes.
Yeah, I just did that, yeah.
And noticing it in a good way, not a, it sticks out and it's noticeable, if you know what I mean? It takes talent. There are a couple of colorists that are just amazing.
I agree.
And then Marvin went with Robert Kirkman, given he's a fan of The Walking Dead Deluxe and Energon, not a surprise. And again, Kirkman's been around the block.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's another one that tends to show up regularly in the favorite creators at the end of the year.
All right, over to me?
Yeah.
All right, I wanted to pick something crazy for me because the next question is comics, favorite publisher. And honestly, I almost went with Titan just for the Conan license. And then I almost went with Image just for the Ghost Machine imprint. But I went with something different, and it's a big publisher. And it's weird. I have to explain myself here. DC, I think they did a good job with their All-In initiative. And by All-In initiative, I'm not all in. But they created heat around their properties. It just by switching up the creative teams, they came out with those Absolute titles, which are very popular right now. They started reprinting Omnibus and Absolute editions that they had not done for like almost like a year and a half. There was none of that really coming out, random one here and there. So they got their trades and hardcovers flowing again. And they have quite a few other decent books, like the Green Lantern stuff I'm enjoying by Jeremy Adams. I'm enjoying a lot of stuff that's coming out from DC, which was a little bit surprising to me because I'm not a DC guy. And so just because of that, I was like, I had to give it to DC.
I can see that.
Yeah. So that was my pick. How about you, John?
I went with Dynamite Entertainment.
Wow. That's another weird one I wouldn't have guessed. But it's because of Thundercats?
Thundercats, Space Ghosts, Johnny Quest. They're also doing Terminator. So it's totally on the strength of properties they don't own, but they're doing a really good job with. And there's a certain aspect right now that there's kind of a Saturday morning vibe to some comics out there that I'm really enjoying.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Now, over to our listener picks. First up, we got Nick's picks, who also chose DC. He said DC, of course. And I know Nick is a very big DC guy just from the previous Spotlight clips.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quit them so long as they publish Batman and Superman. And I agree, I like Superman more than Batman personally. And their art styles always resonate with me. Bright spots this year included Javier Rodriguez on Santana, Dan Moore on World's Finest, Bruno Redondo on Nightwing, which for me was just fabulous.
Yeah.
And Chris Samnee on Batman and Robin Year One, which I am really loving Batman and Robin Year One. That works for me.
Samnee was such a great pick for that on the artist, too.
I agree. It feels retro while not being dated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's perfect. Okay, over to Nicholas. He said, Marvel, I read very little from others. And Nicholas, that pick gives me warm and fuzzy all in my heart because I'm a Marvel guy. Even though I've just picked DC, I love Marvel. I grew up a Marvel kid, a zombie. X-Men Patrick, he chose, usually Marvel is my favorite publisher, but this year it's Image. So he switched it up. The Energon universe, which includes Transformers, G.I. Joe, and Void Rivals, has me grabbing on mostly indies on Wednesdays. I'm rereading Invincible for the third time. I am waiting for trades of Ghost Machine books like Rook Exodus. I love that, by the way. Redcoat and the Rockefellers. Not much a reader of Geiger, but I'll give it a try. Honestly, Geiger's fantastic, too. I have really enjoyed 8 Billion Genies by Charles Soule, and recently I read Lucky Devils, too. It was great. I have been collecting the colored Walking Dead, and we have 98 more issues until completed. My 9-year-old loved Stray Dogs and now is reading Feral. Hey, your 9-year-old and I, we would be good friends because I love Feral too. I think it's fantastic and I love Stray Dogs. She asked me every couple of weeks if another has come out yet. This is a huge win in my book.
Yeah.
The funny part is she asked me, so I guess I have the taste of a 9-year-old girl because I like Feral, that comic. Man, that's horrifying. But it's a good book. I really love it. And I think it's because I have two cats. Some of my kids' favorite animated movies are A Bug's Life. Is that Fern Gully?
Fern Gully, yeah.
Okay, didn't know that. Epic, and recently, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
That's a classic.
Yeah. With all that, the book coming out called Bug Wars by Jason Aaron looks interesting. Me too. I pre-ordered it. It looks fantastic. I did a preview spotlight clip on that. These are all reasons why Image is now my favorite publisher. And I am with you on that Bug Wars. It looks so good.
And those are certainly great reasons to be getting behind Image right now. They've got a lot of good stuff coming out. So
yeah, terrific stuff. Okay, over to Zach. Not specific cover artist that comes to mind. Oh, no specific cover artist that comes to mind. Okay, so he doesn't have a fit. I guess he thought it was just cover artist. Okay, well, it could have been anyone, but he does not like any specific cover artist. Okay,
no, it could have been a publisher for whatever reason, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, let's see. Next up, we got Chris, and he said, Ghost Machine, having met the creators at Fan Expo in Toronto, I know that they really care about the books they are producing. And I remember Chris came to the book club and was showing us pictures because he went with his grandson to that convention. And he had like a dinner with the people from Ghost Machine, and they came around and talked to him and stuff. And that just sounds like the coolest thing ever. I was like, that's amazing. He took pictures with the guys. I was like, that is awesome. That experience was well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Jason Zeller, DC Comics. I am so happy they're putting out the DC Finest line of comics, which seems to be their version of Marvel's Epic Collections. I prefer this Epic Finest size of comic collection versus the heavier omnibus size. The thick compendium size, which easily gets spine wear and has images lost in the gutter of the books. The initial DC Finest books seem to be varied with lots of obscure characters who have not seen a lot of shine in recent years. I am hoping they will eventually cover entire runs such as Marvel is close to completing. Who knows how many years it'll take them to cover Action Comics Superman issues or the run of Detective Comics. It'll take them 32 years. Now, Batman series, but one can hope. There are so many series I enjoyed reading over the years that I would love to have complete runs of, including many war titles like Our Army at War, Sergeant Rock, and Weird War Tales series, as well as the Bronze Age mystery titles like House of Mystery, House of Secrets, and others. That would all be really cool, and I do have a couple epics, and they are like a perfect format because that stuff he said is true. With the big compendiums, you do get some spine wear and gutter loss and stuff like that. And omnibus are heavy. They're really heavy. I love them, but they're heavy.
Yeah. You know, mentioning House of Mystery, House of Secrets, how have they not tapped those for something on a streaming service?
I have no clue, because that seems like ripe for the picking.
I mean, that would be a great kind of pairing where you do two stories that maybe are related, maybe they're not. But again, play up the House of Mystery, the House of Secrets, the whole Cain Abel. Whether you tell new stories or not, but hang on to the kind of the framing sequence and the format of the stuff. It seems like that would do well in today's streaming marketplace.
It really does. And hey, Discovery, is it still Discovery Time Warner? I think they can actually produce some stuff. So they have the studios. So
yeah,
who knows? All right. Over to Marvin.
Dr. Mo.
Sorry. Almost skipped Dr. Mo. Dr. Mo. Image Comics due to the following titles. The Local Man, which is the flipbook, Public Domain, The Domain, Geiger, Redcoat, The Power Fantasy, and Blood Squad 7. All fantastic picks, except I never read Blood Squad 7.
That's kind of a modern take on Youngblood, I think.
Okay. I never picked it up. And then last, we got Marvin with Image, specifically Skybound, which is doing the Energon universe.
Does seem to be where a lot of things happening at Image tends to be.
Yeah, and the Walking Dead reprints, so there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, head to the next question.
Yeah, let's do that.
And that's, what comic book do you wish more people would read or wish they would publish? And usually it's kind of the same thing, because if they're not reading it, they won't publish it, but you wish they would. For me, there's kind of two things, and I've probably used these in years past because they still haven't gotten around to doing it. First one from DC, I want a good Legion of Superheroes title. And I don't want them to do yet another reboot. I don't necessarily want them to go back to the retro boot. I want them to just pick something and stick with it and make it work and focus on it just being a good title. It's been ages, I think, since we've had what I considered a strong, viable Legion title. And we've had some Legion titles that I didn't think were strong and viable and stuff, and I'm longing for the good old days. Boom still has the Power Ranger license. They're doing Power Ranger Prime, which I like. I think they should go for what conceptually is low-hanging fruit, although it'd be a little bit of work. I want to see them do a Power Ranger Who's Who official handbook, that kind of thing. Something where it just showcases both what they've done in the comics, but what's happened in the TV shows and stuff like that. Act as a reference material. Maybe do a couple of miniseries on some of the other teams that they've touched on but haven't really focused on. Because I think there's a lot to be done with that property, and Hasbro's not doing it, so somebody should.
Okay, interesting. Well, okay, mine, I don't know where I got this, but I wrote the question down differently. I wrote down, what changes do you think the publisher should make to the lineup? And what should they stop publishing or start publishing?
That's fair. That's good.
Okay, so that's what I wrote an answer for. So I'm going to give you that answer whether you want it or not. I went with Marvel and DC need to focus on core characters, teams, without going over the top. And what I mean by that is I get tired of seeing, like, let's say 12 Batman books. Maybe two or three I can see. I don't like seeing 8 Spider-Man books like Spider-Boy and this spider and that spider. And we have symbiote books and all that. How about an Amazing Spider-Man, maybe an Ultimate Spider-Man? I'm good with that. 2 or 3 max. And figure out what you're doing with the modern takeover characters and make a decision for me. Because, like, a thing that I would like to see is I would like to see a decision made around, it seems like everywhere we have the legacy character and the new fresh reinvented character. And they don't get rid of them. So we have 2 of them running around. We have 2 Captain Americas. We have 2 Wolverines. We have 2 Nick Furies. It rinse and repeat. And I wish they could just say, hey, this character stepped in and they picked up the hammer of Thor like they did, and Jane became Thor, but then she put it down and she became Valkyrie. I don't think she has to be Thor in perpetuity forever, and it seems like we're kind of stuck in that rut where we have these rinse and repeat characters, and I wish they'd just say, okay, this is the Nick Fury we're going with, and you can be whoever, and this is Captain America, and you're the Falcon again, or something like that. It just seems weird always having 2, and they can't change. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes down to every title needs to have a clear identity.
Yeah.
If you're going to have 8 Batman books, why?
Yeah, like they're vanity books at some point, you know, like this creative team. Well, all right.
Well, I mean, they've had takes in the past where Action Comics would be Superman doing the big action set pieces and stuff. You would have another one that was more focusing on him interacting with the Daily Planet staff, or another one where it's kind of a team-up book or something like that.
Okay.
To where the type of story you get, there's a different identity of each title. And for most of these, I think they're lacking on that. But I also think, to your point with the Spider-Man characters, the Venom characters and such, you're watering down your property when you put so many of them out.
Yeah.
And again, each title lacks an identity at that point.
They really do. And it becomes frustrating. And then I inevitably, this is me, I end up dropping all of them except for maybe 1. And because I get a little bit frustrated and I don't want to have to read 8 Superman books or whatever, I'm going to read this one. This is the one I like.
Well, back when the sales numbers were available and I was going through those on a regular basis, whenever you had that kind of franchise of titles, 9 times out of 10, there would be one selling head and shoulders above the rest because it was the leader of the pack. It was the flag bearer for that franchise. You would have Batman and then all the other Batman books selling about half that. Same with the Spider-Man stuff or Green Lantern or what have you. And I see putting more titles out there trying to get more sales, but it doesn't work.
No, it really doesn't.
You're watering down your properties in the process.
And at these prices, you cannibalize your sales and cannibalize your properties. Everyone jumps into Batman, you can't publish anything new.
Yeah.
The budget's spent.
Well, and again, I think most people are going to pick the one they feel matters. And they're usually going to go to whatever is the de facto, at least perceived to be, leader of the franchise, the flagship or something.
I agree.
All right, head to listener picks.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, Nick's picks. I wish the Big Two would streamline their lines instead of fracturing their bases. Why are there 2 different Batman and Robin series ongoing? Why do we need both an Amazing Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man ongoing? Sales, for sure, but it's hard even for this experienced reader to follow along. Otherwise, I feel all the publishers are providing excellent variety. Even the indie output is feeling less like Hollywood pitches these days. I'll reiterate that Archie needs an ongoing series, even if it's trade paperbacks. How hard is it to sell teen drama considering all the manga crowd? And First Second never followed up with volumes 5 and 6 of the Castle in the Stars series. We need some publishers to continue the English translation of this French series from Alex Alice. So I think he agrees with you on some of the points.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree with him that the indie books are feeling less like Hollywood pitches, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think when Archie stopped doing ongoing titles, and I'm not entirely sure they've totally stopped that, but it sure feels that way. That was a turning point for them and not for the better.
I would agree. Yeah.
All right, Nicholas, I guess this is an ongoing rant, but they should start writing individual comics instead of writing a long story and then just cutting it up into 12 chapters. Seldom today a single comic book issue you don't have a proper intro, start, mid, end. It just continues on and on till the large overall story comes to a shocking conclusion and then reverts back to the status quo when the next writer comes in.
Yep.
There's a lot in that.
I felt every word of that paragraph.
I've been going with the write accessible individual issues for ages, so I totally agree with that. I think writers are going for the long form, and the audience isn't hanging in for it. 12 chapters these days, I feel, is absurdly optimistic. And then the point that everything just reverts back to the status quo when the next writer comes in, so true, and so disappointing.
Yeah, it is disappointing.
I mean, there were times when you couldn't tell who the writer was because they just picked up where things left off. Editors helped smooth the edges out on that. These days, you've got one person stopping, another person starting a new volume of the same property. It's as if they didn't read the previous volume at all.
Yeah. One of two things happen. Either the previous writer or the new writer repackages everything and puts it back to where it was. Or, like you said, they pick it up and I'm starting to read. I'm like, wait a minute, what happened? How did this happen? You know, why is Ultron a good guy? Why is he on the Avengers? Where did this happen? I was asking you that with West Coast Avengers. You're like, I think it happened here. I'm like,
yeah,
okay. It's just like bizarre stuff. But that was a bad example. But like, because there was no previous volume of the West Coast Avengers. But that routinely happens where you pick up the next writer and you're like, this isn't even the same thing I was reading before. What's going on?
Well, and even if they get around to explaining it down the line of, well, here's what happened between volumes. If you're withholding that for a while, that's not a good sign either.
Correct.
So I definitely think there's problems with the storytelling style and has been for a while. All right, X-Men Patrick. The big two need to stop catering to a niche population. Mostly the political or sexual orientation changes annoy me the most. Plus, comics aren't written for the older generation anymore, but the younger generation isn't into comics as much as we are or were. Cell phones and video games have killed reading, I believe. Another issue could be that Marvel and DC had a great run, but they're now stuck in their continuity trap. If they change something, someone else is going to be ticked off, me included. This is why indies are working better for some of us. I have a few of my favorite characters, Gambit and Rogue, Hulk, Punisher, and Spider-Man. Once you change my character I've known for many years, I get turned off. I bought Get Fury, but I don't see me buying another Punisher book unless Frank Castle is in it. And not the pansy that they made was a wife beater. I want the soldier, the Punisher of criminals, back. Spider-Man is on my cut list as a comic because I'm done with JRJR as an artist. I really like Ultimate Spider-Man, though. What I am trying to say is that change my character I have known for years kills my love for those newer comics. They changed something, and now I'm saying get off my lawn. Change them, but put them in a different universe, then I can work with that. Some of the miniseries have worked better than the ongoings to me. I love the incorporation of Aliens, Predator, and Godzilla recently. I've enjoyed Dark Knights of Steel, too. Definitely I got the get off my lawn vibe out of that.
Yeah. But I understand what he's saying, like with Punisher, because Jason Aaron took it in such a weird direction, completely changed the origin of the character, essentially. Yeah. And you feel like you're not reading the same thing, and I understand the frustration. And then they came out with a new Punisher, and it was a different dude, not Frank Castle. And now the Punisher is just in limbo, never to be seen again until they figure out, how do we fix this?
If you've got to totally retool the character because it's not the character you want to write, then you're writing the wrong character.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. I do feel they're going after a younger reader than certainly I am today. And I don't think that's working, and they're losing existing ongoing readers that actually have gotten enough into their career path that they can afford to buy these things at the ridiculous prices they're at.
Yep.
Romita Jr.'s art, I think, has gotten a more pronounced style over the years, and yeah, it kind of turns me off too. There's a way to be changing the characters where they evolve versus revolve. And there's some where it's like, oh, okay, you know, Robin becomes Nightwing. That's cool. That makes sense. There are others where you miss an issue and suddenly the John Kent Superboy is aged to twice his previous age and he's called Superman shortly thereafter. That spins on a dime. That's more the revolve than evolve. And I don't think most of us readers object to a slow and steady evolution of the characters. There comes a point, though, where they have diverged enough from the core of the character, the pitch of the character, that it is no longer that character.
Yeah.
And Punisher, I think, is a classic example of that, going back to the Frankencastle days, and he was an angel at one point. I mean, the stuff they've put that character through is absurd.
Then he pretty much became almost like marked by a demon from his childhood. And a marked beast, almost. It's weird, like, what they've done with him. It's just like, It was just a guy who was out for vengeance who was like a soldier who was traumatized and had his family killed. That's a perfect setup. That's all you need.
Yeah.
But they've done all different kinds of things, and it's a mess.
And again, I think you could take the classic Punisher character, tweak him a little, push him in some directions, change him a little bit. Maybe he winds up working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's their Black Ops guy or something like that.
And that would be perfect for him, you know, working in the military form, but as the good guys working against the mafia or super bad guys, you know?
Yeah. There's ways you can make it work while still staying true to the character. And I think what X-Men Patrick is saying is so often they don't stay true to the character.
Yeah. And, you know, they could really cross over Frank Castle with Nick Fury. And I'm talking about the original Nick Fury because they did that in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
With a series that I was just reading. I can't remember what it's called. It came out this year or 2024. But they met up in Vietnam. So I'm like, that's a perfect guy to get him into S.H.I.E.L.D. Hey, almost as his handler, original Nick Fury. Because original Nick Fury, I don't know where he is. He's out there. He's not dead. He was the walker on the wall.
Well, he moved over to the new Ultimate Universe, apparently.
Oh, is that what happened? Oh, God.
No, he okay. didn't. But
oh, is that what happened? Oh, God. He took a vacation, went to the Ultimateville. Oh, God.
Okay, GL fan. DC Comics, historically, will sometimes pick up various indie comics from Image, Boom Studios, Dark Horse, etc. Marvel has never really grabbed me. So I guess he's wanting more people to kind of support DC, which I can understand. But I think there's a certain amount of having to earn that support, too.
Yeah, I agree.
And some of their titles they've absolutely been doing that with. Again, Nightwing had some good stuff, Green Lantern, some others. Others, I think they're coasting and need to up their game. All right, Chris, I think the publishers need to have, as the saying goes, a come-to-Jesus moment and figure out who their audience is, because at the present time, I think they're pandering to groups who aren't interested in comics. The people who want to purchase comics are not the people comic writers are writing for, and as a result, comic sales are dropping off. Wow, that is succinct, actionable, and very well-phrased, Chris. I mean, that's in on a dime.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to go after a new audience that isn't there to be buying.
Yeah.
And if they're going to do that, then, hey, get some outreach outside of the comic shops. Get the people into the stores to buy the stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah. You know, to that point, it just made me think. I've been looking at the top sellers, bestsellers, and novels and stuff like that since I got my Kindle thing set up.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a lot of, like, let's say fantasy, even sci-fi books, I was looking, not always, but especially fantasy, the top writers are female writers. And I started talking with people at CrossFit. Who reads here? Talk to people in my office. Who reads here? And typically, the guys in my office don't ever read. The ladies are more likely about 50-50 readers. And so I feel like they've realized, hey, we have more of a female readership. We have more female writers. It just kind of happens symbiotically. I don't think anyone's pushing that. But I feel like in the comic side, they have this older readership that tends to be a little bit more male heavy, not exclusively male, and yet they're catering to a Gen Z demographic that is not reading these things. And I've never seen a business cut off their nose to spite their face. We want them, and I understand they want to grow and they want a new market, but you cannot abandon your current market or you will sink the ship.
Well, it would be like if a gas station chain had decided to go after the electric vehicle market, say 10 years ago, and just replaced all their pumps with charging stuff.
Yeah.
Before the cars were really out there in numbers and people needed that. They'd have gone out of business.
Out of business and everyone would be furious.
Yeah, you got to sell what people are buying.
Yep.
And I think in addition to the come to Jesus moment Chris was talking about where they got to figure out who their audience is and who they're writing for, I think they also need to figure out who their characters are and who they're writing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's in sync either.
It isn't. Sometimes you'll read a character and you're like, this isn't right. Like the poor Punisher. This isn't right. Or whatever character that you're a fan of, when you read it and you know the writer does not have a grasp of that character, you can feel it. It doesn't ring true and it is wrong. And that reader who is a fan of the property will leave and not read that.
So at one point, Geoff Johns, when he was back at DC's chief creative officer,
yeah,
he was the one kind of channeling the this is who these characters are and how we should write them. Okay, so they've had that come to Jesus moment on that side of things. At another point, Dan Didio flat out said, and I think this was around 2011, before they kind of revamped everything with the New 52, that they realized that nobody cared about their characters and that somehow Hal Jordan had become an intergalactic villain, and all these characters had veered away from the heroic people they should have been, because they'd lost their eye on the ball as an editorial. So I think there's many lessons to be learned, certainly for the big two, but I think also for the smaller publishers. If you start out writing a title, keep writing that title. If you want to change the nature of it or whatever, that's fine. But again, you got to evolve it, not just revolve it.
Exactly.
So, all right, let's see what Jason's rant is. Not that all of these are going to be rants, but definitely it's interesting tone this year. And I don't disagree with any of the stuff so far.
No, it makes sense.
All right, Jason, it feels like there are way too many books, especially in the DC Comics and Marvel Comics monthly releases. The main problem, I think, is there are so many derivative characters with the same powers or design, such as Spider Powers as an example. I know relaunches get that issue one boost, but it feels like there are too many. The unannounced miniseries books that look like the beginning of a new series but end up being 5 or 6 issues, which was apparently always the plan, make me less likely to be willing to pick up a new series. That being said, I would not mind having more series set in earlier times or what they refer to as retro series. One good example was the Marvel Superhero Secret Wars Battle World series that happened in the middle of Secret Wars. Overall, just let me know if this is going to be a miniseries or if I'm to expect the series to be an ongoing.
Yeah, I can tell you that can work. The Marvel Superhero Secret Wars and also Batman and Robin Year One is working. Or actually all the Mark Waid stuff originally that he was writing.
World's Finest is a good example.
It's just a point in time where things were simpler, I think. And the characters were very well-defined and the rogues were well-defined. And you don't have all maybe the weird changes and weird stuff of where the characters are right now that may not be a good place.
I think doing period piece comics for Marvel and DC and other publishers makes a ton of sense. It allows you to get around certain aspects of modern society that preclude certain stories.
Yeah.
The if only I can get in touch with somebody and the world would be saved doesn't work today because everyone's got a cell phone. But you roll that back to the 1960s, totally from ballgame. Jason's point of derivative characters, too many spider characters, etc. We've talked about that a couple of times already. Completely agree. The retro series, again, I personally wasn't wowed by the Secret Wars Battle World stuff, but I appreciated the attempt at it. I think Mark Waid is knocking this idea out of the park on multiple titles over at DC. That one shot we just got by, who did the Green Arrow Green Lantern one we talked about on the monthly spotlight?
Was that Chris Condon or no?
I forget, but that was another one, not by Mark Waid, that same idea though.
Yeah.
And this whole, is it a miniseries, is it ongoing? I think they're basically getting people to write a miniseries with a what would you do if we can continue it idea, but having a clean end to where they can basically tell them when the first issue sales come in, yeah, we're killing it at 5, or maybe we'll go for another arc. I think that's disingenuous and a bad idea. But let's face it, everything's a miniseries these days. I think expecting anything to be an ongoing is optimistic at best.
It seems like that's a bygone era and a fond memory that we'll never see again.
Yeah, when I started getting comics when I was in high school, I could basically tell you what I would probably be getting 3 years out because everything was a monthly title. Legion came out on the second week, this came out on the third week, whatever. Fifth week, okay, we'll have some specials, you know, whatever. But not a... What titles am I getting today that I was getting 3 years ago, other than like Action Comics or something? And it's a little easier if you say, well, what franchises am I getting? Because sure, maybe I'm getting X-Men or Avengers. I'm certainly not getting the same volume as 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But again, that goes to the too many relaunches of number ones.
Which is sad.
It's sad and it's ineffective because you get a bump for the number one, but it's smaller and smaller every time.
And I'm afraid at this point they've jaded the readership so much that if they told people it's ongoing, nobody would believe them. They've cried wolf too many times.
It wouldn't be ongoing. Nobody would buy it enough to make it ongoing. They can't tell us that.
Yeah. I mean, if they said we're going to fix the problem, here's what we're going to do, you can't believe them. They can't do it.
Agreed. But I think the number one is burned in two ways. One, they've done it so many times.
Can't do it.
It doesn't bump the sales. And two, because they've done it so many times, you can't go into a number one truly believing it's a starting point.
Correct. I bought so many number ones where I'm like, what is going on? That's a horrible feeling.
Yeah. And that just makes the sales trends worse and worse.
Yep.
All right, Dr. Mo, for DC Comics, I'm always going to advocate for a new Legion of Superheroes title, so I'm with that. For Image, a new Youngblood title, expecting one in 2025. I'm curious if he's expecting, what he's expecting out of a new Youngblood title, given that I'm pretty sure Rob Liefeld lost the rights to that a while back.
Yeah.
For Marvel, a mutant title written by Peter David.
Oh, that'd be cool.
He's done some great ones in the past, yeah.
Yeah, X-Factor had a huge run.
Yeah. For Dark Horse Comics, another Joy Operation series by Brian Bendis and Stephen Byrne. He really enjoyed Joy Operations 2, released in 2024. I read both of those, and I thought those were a ton of fun, so that's a good call. All of them are good calls. Although, for me to get a Youngblood title, I'd need to know who's on it and what their take is.
Yeah, I don't even know who owns it right now. I know that Rob does not own it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And then from Marvin, considering the recent Diamond news, I'd like to see larger publishers take on co-publishing imprint relationships with viable smaller publishers.
I agree. I would love to see that because I have a fear, and that fear is coming to fruition slowly, it seems like, that we will have a slew of small publishers going out of business rather quickly.
I fear that is true. I think DC is in the better position to do that kind of co-publishing stuff. I think Image would be more likely to do it, though.
Yeah.
And I think if somebody could find a way to basically get another kind of branch of Image versus the existing studios and the Image Central stuff that could do this kind of publishing imprint kind of a thing, that could really save a lot of publishers and also benefit Image by getting them enough more books. Maybe they get a better printing deal, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you could see an Image reaching out to Terry Moore, hey, we'll do reprints every now and then. That's essentially what he's doing.
Well, not even just that. It's just you keep producing the books, do what you want to do. We'll help traffic them.
Exactly. We'll even do some promotion. We'll do put you in our PDF
now
as catalogs go away.
For anyone who either doesn't know the recent Diamond news or is listening to this years from now and has forgotten the recent Diamond news, we're recording this near the end of January, and about a week and a half ago, Diamond filed for Chapter 11.
That's the period of time we're in.
Yeah.
The great unknown right now.
So it's going to be interesting to see if Diamond survives. It doesn't look currently like either Lunar or Penguin Random House are looking to take on additional publishers. So a lot of these companies, I don't know where they're going to be come the end of the year. And I think this is a good place to pause our conversation. We'll pick it up next time on part 2 of Yearly Comic Spotlight number 18 for 2024. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.